Welcome to the Approaching the Natural podcast with Sid Garza-Hillman and sponsored by the Stanford Inn Eco Resort on the Mendocino coast of California. Sid is a certified nutritionist, health coach, and author of Approaching the Natural, a health manifesto, out now on Roundtree Press. Sid is also the programs director at the Stanford Inn's Mendocino Center for Living Well, one of the most holistic and integrated wellness centers in the country. The Approaching the Natural podcast explores all aspects of human health, including nutrition, movement, mindfulness, art, and much more.
Hello, everybody. This is Sid Garza-Hillman and the Approaching the Natural podcast. I come here each week and discuss my philosophy of health, which is that the closer we get to what is natural to us by degrees as a species, the better we thrive in this modern world, that we are a natural species in an unnatural world, but that there's a way to bridge the gap and do it in a way that's not stressful to you. Hopefully, I am the small step advocate, and I am anti all quick fix kinds of models. They don't work, and each week I come here to try to convince you of that fact. But anyway, most of the time I come on here and muse in my own way, but once in a while I scatter in an interview or two, and this is one of those times. So a while ago, and I don't actually quite remember when, but Cody Goodell, I think, followed me on Twitter, and then there was one time where I actually got hacked on Twitter, and he was like, "This doesn't sound like you," because it was like for some weight loss pill or something, and so he kind of got my back on that. Anyway, I started looking into him a little bit, and he's got a really cool blog called Fat to Plant, and that's fat, and then the number two, and then plant. And he's a accomplished runner, but he didn't start out that way. And this interview is interesting to me, and I hope that it is interesting to you. His journey is really, really fascinating, but at the same time, kind of not unusual in the way that he was brought up and the way that he lived for a long time. And that's what I think is actually most interesting. It's not some crazy thing. He's a pretty normal guy. He's got kids and a wife, and just through a few kind of interesting moments in his life, changed everything for him. And you'll see what I mean by this, but this is why one of the things that happens in this interview is you'll see why I'm definitely not anti-technology, because in a very weird way, technology saved this guy's life. And now, like I said, he's killing, you know, races, and he's got a sponsorship with Ultra Zero Drop Shoes, which are great shoes. It's a new company. You know, look at them. I'm not sponsored by them, so I'm not out here plugging, except to say I think it's cool for them to hook up with a guy like this, and I think that's actually excellent. So I don't want to give too much else away on this, so I will let you hear for yourself what goes down in this interview. But I will say a couple quick announcements here. On Twitter and Instagram, I am at Sid Garza Hillman. Facebook is Transitioning to Health. My website is transitioningtohealth.net, where you can throw your email in there and get updates from me now and then, not many, but you can get a free chapter of my book, which, you know, hey. And this podcast is sponsored by the Stanford Inn Eco Resort on the Mendocino coast of California. The Stanford Inn is a 41-room lodge with an indoor pool and fireplaces and ocean views and an organic farm. But most importantly, and I'm kind of half joking, but there is a full wellness center with Chinese herbals and nutrition and cooking and gardening classes and yoga, tai chi, massage, all that kind of cool stuff. But I am the programs director there and the staff nutritionist, and I head up the retreats and all that kind of cool stuff. In fact, I'm starting a retreat this week, so I'm excited about that. But if you ever feel like coming out and hanging out with me or just hanging out and relaxing, you can do that too. There's canoes up the big river and all these kinds of cool things. So that's how that goes. And my last announcement is first a thank you to everybody who came out for my monthly Spreecast. That's Spreecast, S-P-R-E-E-C-A-S-T. I do it on the first Saturday of every month. Last Saturday was the last Saturday we did in April was fantastic. I appreciate everybody. I had a little technical problem in the beginning, and then it got ironed out and turned out to be a really cool thing. So the next one is May 3rd. That's May 3rd at 12 noon Pacific Standard Time in the United States. Anybody in the world can join in. It's free. And how can you not do that? I mean, honestly. So anyway, let's get to this interview, and I hope you enjoy it. If you like this podcast or my book or anything that I do, reviews always help get the word out. So throw up on iTunes a quick review and or Amazon or wherever you feel like reviewing. You know, tell the friend on the subway. That's a review. Okay, you guys, thanks, and I will be back next week as always. And in the meantime, be well. Enjoy this interview. I hope you do. What year was this when you were 350?
2005.
Okay. And how long did you, like, what, give me a little bit about your upbringing in terms of, like, what was your family life like? Well, how old are you, first of all?
33.
Okay. So how what was your upbringing like?
Well, we moved to Phoenix when I was 9 from Wyoming. And then going from that kind of slow paced lifestyle to the city, I think kind of put those stresses on your family, you know, going from like a house with a yard to an apartment. It was definitely stressful, and just adapt, and also just the weather. It was 122 my second day.
Wow. And it was in Phoenix?
Yeah.
Wow. The second day you got, I moved to Texas when I was 14, and 5 days after I got there, Hurricane Alicia hit. And so it's like, I kind of relate. Anyway, so go ahead.
So just growing up, and just, I think going from one extreme to another at an early age kind of stresses a family out. And, you know, my parents are totally opposite ends of the spectrum, and I think eventually the stress and that lifestyle and their differences, they ended their marriage when I was like 13.
Okay.
Which really wasn't like a mental stress, because it wasn't a shocker by any means, because right. They were so different,
right?
But at the same time, you know, that love is shown, you know, my mom by giving us whatever we wanted. And, you know, when you're a kid, you eat a lot of food and a lot of junk and crap. So that kind of, I think, set the base for the next few years.
Right.
You know, and then,
go ahead.
No, go for it.
No, I was just going to say, like, so prior to that time, I mean, what was were you heavy as a young kid? Were you active? Like, did you do sports? You know, what was your sibling? You know, like, how many siblings do you have?
Oh, I have a brother who's 10 years older, and then another brother who's just within 2 years of me. So we're pretty close.
And then how was the health of, like, and in terms of like growing up, do you have memories of it being a fairly healthy household as compared to other households, or did you even pay attention to that?
I didn't even pay attention to that. My dad happens to be a chef. So I don't know if, it's a weird dynamic because he's a chef. So he works so much in such, you know, random hours, or did, well, he still does, but you know, I don't know what everybody else was doing necessarily at the time, you know, but it just, we had food and it was good. And then when my parents got divorced, it was, you know, at that point I'm 13, so I'm a little more real self-reliant and things, you know, I make those choices, and easy, you know, Hot Pockets and all that are the easier things to do.
Right. So did you, when your parents divorced, did you stay with your mom?
Yeah.
And then did she work?
She did.
Right. What did she do?
She worked at a resort. She was like a housekeeping manager at the time.
Okay. And then your dad was a chef. Okay. So when you, so she worked full time. So what was your, like, were you, you got home from school and you were there by yourself for a while with the other, with your brothers? And
yeah. Just, well, at that point, my older brother had, you know, he's 20.
23,
you know,
he's right.
had his own life. And you know, had moved or whatever. And he actually hadn't, when we moved to Wyoming, he was in college. So he had stayed was playing football at the University of Wyoming.
Gotcha.
So it wasn't, so he wasn't really, from that point on, really in a everyday kind of role.
Gotcha. But you and your younger brother.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And then, so being self-reliant, obviously you just said you kind of relied on the fast. I mean, this is not atypical. I mean, this was kind of my, you know, there was time, you know, I'd come home and make a couple burritos, you know, that kind of thing. When you were in school, were you heavy? Was that just like kind of your.
Yeah, it was, it's funny because you look, yeah, because you look back at pictures of me and as from like kindergarten through like second or third grade before I moved to Arizona, and I was a thin build, you know, kid, you know, obviously I think playing outside a lot more and may have had something to do with that.
Right.
And then after I moved to Arizona, you could just see like the school years progress slowly, you know, year by year, because then in the summers we would go back and stay with my grandmother for, you know, two and a half months, which is paradise for a kid, you know, and that's, you just load up on the worst kind of food, you know.
Right, right.
It's all home cooking, but
heavy duty and spoiled by your grandma kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so you could see the progression even now, like growing up, just in terms of the way that happened. And then as you, when did you, was there a tipping point for you? Like, did you ever have the self, I mean, were you ashamed of the way you looked as a kid? I mean, I always remember, what I try to get across, and you know, it's like when kids are kids, like there are certain kids that like you can eat kind of all the same thing, but there's kids whose metabolisms, you know, like they're just going to be more prone to being overweight. And it's just one of those things. Obviously, as we get older, the level of nutrition, as you'll speak to, I'm sure, plays a much greater role in that. And then even if you have a metabolism that keeps you thin, it doesn't mean you're going to be healthy and all those kinds of things. But was there a point where you were ashamed of the way you looked? I mean, I always remember like the kids who put the shirts on at the beach, you know, that was for me. I lived in San Diego as a kid and there was always like a couple kids, and looking back on that, that can't have been pleasurable. You know what I mean? Do you have memories of that as a kid?
Oh, I've always been the kid with the t-shirt on at the pool, and living in Phoenix at the end of the, you know, your year end parties were always at somebody's house with the pool, you know, so that wasn't, you know, it's, the irony is that my brother, who's literally like 2 years and 4 days younger than me growing up, was like thin as a rail, like could see his ribs, you know. And we basically, well, in theory, we were served the same things, but slowly through time, you realize that that I was consuming a much higher portion of what we were being served.
Right. And
you know,
was there any attachment? I mean, would you describe your childhood as generally happy, or was there things in school that made you, that stressed you out? Were you ever made fun of because of your weight? How did that play into the habits, you think?
Like school, I think for the most part, I think elementary through middle school, you know, it's kids still, I think, are innocent and haven't been, I don't know, taught the pettiness, not necessarily pettiness, but just, you know, the what's not normal and how to make other people feel bad. So through elementary school, it was never a big deal. And also with, I think, having two brothers, it kind of, I don't know, it makes you a little more hardened. I guess not hardened, but
yeah, I'm with you.
You know, you don't take things as personal, because I'm pretty sure there was nobody out there in the world that said anything more vile than one of my, or, you know, and I've said the same thing to them.
Yeah, yeah,
know, no, that's just part of growing up.
I get it. It's why I was put in dresses as a kid. Anyway, and so, but when you got into high, I mean, what I'm trying to look for is I'm trying to get to. Did you just keep gaining weight throughout high school? I mean, was it like a slippery slope that you were kind? Was it ever conscious? Were you ever like, wow, like I need to, or did you get into football where it was sort of like encouraged in a way?
Well, because then once, because I think middle school was like the beginning, like a taste of being tough. Just because, you know, obviously 13 and 14 year olds and the changes going on in life, their bodies, and, you know, it makes things awkward as it is. So I don't know if it was exclusive to me, because everybody, I think, at the time was probably pretty insecure about, you know, between acne or, you know, or whatever. So, but once football started in ninth grade, it almost becomes more acceptable, you know. And as my big brother played football, and, you know, that's just, you know, kind of, that's just how it was. So it wasn't that big of a notion, you know. It wasn't that big. If you played football, it's okay to be fatter.
Yeah, I mean, I went to high school in Texas, so it wasn't, it was, you know, totally encouraged. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, I just had, you know, guys that were just like, got to bulk up, you know, and part of that's weightlifting, part of that's just eating like a madman, you know. What did you play in high, what position?
I went to a smaller high school, so I played on the offensive line, like center, and then just defensive line, whatever. Through my first 3 years, and then my senior year, that summer, I got a little more serious with like my training, and so I was quicker. And that was the other thing that always I had going for me, is that even though I was bigger than most, I was always still athletic. Like I could still do things that the average, you know, somebody half my size wasn't able to do. So I wasn't necessarily introverted in the fact that I was just overweight, and I wasn't athletic. So that, I think that definitely helped.
Right. Did you find yourself, so were you planning on going to college with this? I mean, what was the post high school kind of desire? Was it a football scholarship, or was that just sort of what you did? And
yeah, with football, you know, it gave me that boost of confidence, especially my junior and senior year, because then you're on varsity and there's more attention. And right. And don't get me wrong, I played at a high school where sports weren't necessarily the top priority. Actually, like Linda Carter graduated from there, so there was a more art driven school.
But Wonder Woman was very athletic.
Yeah, and Steven Spielberg, he went there through his junior year. Yeah.
Oops. Anyway, So I mean, but so it wasn't like a big. I mean, I went to school. Like I said, I went to school in Texas where sports were like, you know, reigned supreme. Oh, you know, and so
for sure, growing up in Wyoming and watching my older brother play,
I can only imagine
being able to listen to the game on the radio.
Right.
Then
right.
Growing up.
Yeah.
Here, where there's another high school 4.5 miles away.
Right.
It wasn't. You know, it's obviously a different level.
Right. Did you end up, did you go to college?
I did. I ended up going to community college. One, of course, there's always I think I met my girlfriend in high school. So that in my junior year. So that always, you know, clouds your mind, I guess, as
right.
a teenage boy.
Right.
So I think that kind of, I ended up going to a community college here so I could stay in town.
Right.
And then I basically went from a non-winning high school tradition to a non-winning community college, to the point where their mascot is the Scottsdale Community College Fighting Artichokes.
Oh, that's very, so, yeah, that's menacing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a menacing mascot. Did you still live at home when you went to community college?
What's that?
Did you still live at home when you went to community college?
I did because it's right up the street. Yeah. So basically, it was like I was going to my same high school because there's a whole bunch of other
right same social circles.
Enough. Yeah, so I went from my high school to my high school with ashtrays.
Right.
Basically.
Got it. So the norms were set. The behavior, your place in society, your place in your friends group was all maintained out of high school.
Because the thing is, I wasn't on the necessarily like super social side of things still. Not necessarily, I don't know if because my weight or just my personality in general, especially after, you know, I got a girlfriend and I was like, I wasn't really into the party, like scene and all that. So I didn't have a huge social thing in high school. So, I mean, I hung out with some football players. So it was, when I went to college, it was just, I just hung out with new football players, you know? So it wasn't like the same people. The girlfriend was still there, but, you know, so the only difference here now was that I was getting paid to eat. And, you know, I had stipends to go eat and hang out and lift weights.
Well, now, what do you mean by that? What you went on a scholarship?
Well, with scholarship.
Oh, I didn't know you got a scholarship.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I mean, it was, and obviously it's community college, so it's not like I was going to a huge university where, you know, there's $1 million facility and all that. So it was like there's a little cafeteria. And this little lady that would make the best grilled cheese sandwiches ever. And I think they were like 75 cents.
Right.
So when you're told to be like the biggest guy,
you spend a lot of 75 cents.
I went my senior year in high school, I was 265, 270. And by the time that next year, when I was playing football, that first game my freshman year, I was like 362.
Wow. Is that, and how tall are you?
6'2".
6'2", 362. Is that the heaviest you ever got?
That I know like for a fact that I got. And again, I wasn't like, you know, bed bound kind of, you know, I was obviously still athletic, being able to perform. I think I just barely was like a 40-inch waist, which right. sounds crazy to some people, but at that point, weighing 360 pounds, you know.
Well, you were probably lifting a lot, so a lot of that was muscle mass.
Yeah, a lot of lifting, a lot of eating.
Yeah. So, okay, so now cut to, so you go 4 years at the community college?
No.
It's probably only a two-year college, right?
It's a two-year school, and this is, you know, again, not a highly winning tradition. I think we end up winning two games my freshman year, and then we got new coaches, like same head coach but a new like offensive line coach, and so then they want to change like schemes or whatever, so all of a sudden they're like, well, that's, you're too big, that's not what we want to run. So let's, you know, we need you to start dropping like 10 pounds a week, which
yikes.
You know, 360 and a lot of muscle, it's not that crazy, except, you know, going out at 5 a.m, 5 days a week, and running 100-yard sprints at over 350 pounds on a track.
Wow.
Will quickly break down your body. So eventually I had shin splints so bad that I quit. Like this was preseason workout. We still had 3 weeks before the season, and I was I can't even walk.
Oh my God.
You know, and I wasn't the only, I mean, we were just, like three out of the five starters coming back were just literally like broken.
Right. And I'm sure the concentration by the coaches on nutrition was probably phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, it was more like, I mean, when they told you to lose weight, they didn't say anything about nutrition, I would imagine, for maybe eat less, but wind sprints will do it.
Yeah, no, yeah. it was you weigh 364, you have a weekly weigh-in, if you lose 10 pounds a week, it's not even 3% of your body weight, so it shouldn't be that tough.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean, it came to the point where I was like, I physically, like, I was have to sleep in like a recliner just because of the pressure.
Oh my God. Okay.
It was just so bad.
Got it. Okay, so that's your second year at the community college?
Yeah, I was going into my second year, and I was, it was I was done.
Okay.
I couldn't.
So did you move from there to a 4 year, or did you just get your AA and then you were done there, or what happened?
No, I never. I left there, and I never looked back.
Yeah.
No, I had started working at a like a health club in high school, and I was able to, because I had just left there basically for the season, and I was able to, just go back to work there, and I ended up working there for a few more years.
Okay, so now you're done with community college, you're working at a health club, and you are I mean, I'm assuming that the weight loss that the coaches got you to do either came back or didn't continue, or what was the trajectory there? And also, I don't want to just focus on weight. Like, was there other besides the shin splints, obviously, but did you start to note, or did you feel like, I mean, you were obviously athletic. So when you stopped with the football training, did you feel more lethargic? Did you have any skin issues? Were you going to the doctor? Were you pre-diabetic? Was anything else happening, or did you continue the workouts like at the health club where you were working? Like, what was your life like then?
I didn't, I never, I mean, I may have been just ignorant, because one, I was what, 18, 19,
Right.
going on to 20. So I don't, those aren't necessarily, and at this point, I'd slowly just been gradually getting bigger. So I don't know necessarily anything had stuck out except to the point where this was like the first point where my body was like saying, you need to stop doing what you're doing. And the irony is just, I think working at a health, I think originally out of the gate, I was pretty irritated with the whole thing. And, this was like my dream or whatever, I was going to be in the NFL, which
Right.
obviously it's probably wasn't going to happen.
Right.
So after I healed up a little bit and I was able to actually, run, I dropped, there was, other, I was thinking maybe I'd go in the military, maybe, because I didn't know what to do. I didn't have any necessarily anybody to pay for college. So I dropped a bunch. I think I lost 60. Oh, I had already, well, figure, let me back up. Before I quit, I probably lost, I was probably closer back to right around 300, 310, right around there, just from the mandated weight loss or whatever.
Right.
And then I think it was about 310, 320. And so then I was like, well, I'm gonna just start running. Because the irony is, what stopped me from playing football was too much running. But the whole time I was always a big fan of running
Gotcha.
over lifting weights, just because I felt like there was a start and a finish to it.
Okay. And there's also, wind sprints are a very different animal than, going out for a run,
Absolutely, absolutely. So eventually, I think I lost. I wasn't lifting. I was eating much, much less, just because I wasn't needing it, and I wasn't getting it for free, I think.
Right.
So I ended up dropping down to like 260 in like 6 months, just from running like 3 miles every day or to every other day.
Gotcha. So at this point, is at this point, I would say you're, and was that a con, like you thought, I want to lose weight, or you just were doing what you were doing and running?
Well, at that point, I wanted to lose weight, because I wanted to have, like I said, I didn't know if I wanted to go to the military.
Gotcha.
I didn't really know what, but I knew I couldn't do most. Society had, I even, and that's the crazy thing is, this is 2000, so 15 years ago, 14, and being 300 pounds was still, it wasn't the norm that maybe it is today, even 15 years,
Right. So you were conscious at that point as an adult, like it was functional. You were like, I may go in the military, I may do other stuff, but my weight is going to be prohibitive to certain things, and I'm going to have to tackle this somehow.
Yeah, for okay. sure. Life's tough at 364 pounds, no matter if you're athletic or not.
And why is that?
Just everyday things aren't, again, I think 15 years ago, things weren't as accommodating to larger individuals.
Okay, so I want to get into that a little bit. I actually was listening to something the other day, it was an article I read, and this woman was talking about how she used to be, you know, over 300 pounds, and one of the things was like things that I missed, like the things that I miss now about being heavy, because she's not heavy anymore. And one of the things was she liked the liberation of being able to eat whatever she liked. She liked that freedom of not having to think about that. She also liked the kind of the unspoken sort of power it is when you are that large, you know, like people kind of, you're something to be reckoned with at that size, you know? I mean, and so is there anything in your memory of being that heavy besides the difficulty, but was there stuff that you miss? I mean, was there stuff that you were like, I kind of like being that big, you know, like people didn't mess with me, or what, was there anything like that that you remember?
Yeah, absolutely. There was the first time that I really had lost, and this one didn't hit me until later, but not being called like big guy, you know, like, hey, big guy, you know, or just those kind of things, like that macho kind of a thing that comes along with it, or, you know, that persona that is almost, that's developed, you know, that you, I think, to cope, not necessarily cope, but just this is who I am. I'm big guy, you know, I'm big boned. I can, you know, I can go and I can go to McDonald's and I can get 60 chicken McNuggets and a large, you know, strawberry shake, and it's no big deal.
Is that literally something that you had? 60?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Cause once or twice a year, McDonald's has their like 20 pieces on sale, and yeah, it was good stuff.
You would get three of those.
Yeah.
Wow. I remember, well, I joke about McDonald's on the podcast quite a bit, because I love McDonald's, you know? So my thing was like a Big Mac and 6-piece chicken McNugget. That was my kind of and large fries. That was my standard order. But anyway, it's an aside, but maybe that's why I wanted to talk to you, because you're a McDonald's guy. anyway, there's always like schools, you know, like I was a Burger King person. I was a Wendy's person, you know? Anyway, so what's interesting, I mean, I think it's actually very fascinating. So like people would call you big guy. And then when you got down to 260, I mean, did that kind of stop? Because you're still large. I mean, you're 6'2", no. 260 is pretty big.
Not at that point. And the thing is, I may have lost. I think I was, you know, that skinny fat at that point, because I was just running. I wasn't lifting.
Right.
So you have to think a lot of muscle was built. So I still wasn't going swimming without a shirt on, and I still wasn't, you know, I wasn't ripped or chiseled by any means.
Right. I mean, actually, it's funny, because you probably did lose muscle, and then your weight went down, but not necessarily your fat content.
I would, yeah, absolutely.
Which is really fascinating. Did you but at that point, you're 100 pounds less. Mm-hmm. So did you have, was there any like sagging with your skin? Was there what physical things occurred then?
Yeah. There's definitely, I mean, some sagging. And again, I think, at 19, it wasn't necessarily as bad as it could have been.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I could definitely, besides, I mean, there was the negative of like, you know, just my arms are skinny, and I've always had larger legs, obviously, because you carry around that much weight, your leg right. muscles are going to build.
Right.
So, you know, I felt extremely disproportioned,
uh-huh.
you know, with a skinny chest, well, an unflattering chest for sure, you know, skinny arms, and, you know, not the broad shoulders that I was used to, but I still had these massive calves and
right
and quads.
Right. So, I mean, even at 100 pounds, but that, yeah, that's I mean, and 6 months is just pretty blistering fast.
Yeah, no, it was bad.
Yeah. And then, okay, so I'm just kind of still moving along. But is there, besides the big guy thing, is there anything that, you know, I'm not necessarily, you know, jumping to where you are now, but as compared to now with your life now, is there anything that you sometimes are nostalgic about during that time? Or in terms of your body, obviously, I'm sure you were having good times. You had a girlfriend and all sorts of stuff like that. But is there, in terms of your health?
Health, I mean, I was sleeping much better
then.
Than I was when I was heavy.
Oh, you're sleeping, right. Oh, I mean, now you sleep better than when you were heavy?
Well, just to that, right then at that point.
Oh, at 260.
Yeah. I mean, I'd have to cover up because I was cold at night, or, you know, that big of a, like, noticeable change in that short of time.
Wow. What was the sleeping light when you were 360?
What was that?
What was the sleeping like when you were 360?
It was funny. I don't know, to tell during the evening, you know, I don't know if I had like full blown apnea, but you could definitely tell about 3:30, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, just sitting on the couch with whoever, and I would just start dozing, like hardcore dozing off.
Just fatigued. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. So now we're back to the 260 you. So this progression occurs. Anyway, I haven't done it yet. There was that point with the story with the Japanese people and how much longer when did that occur in the progression?
Well, I had dropped this weight. Me and that high school girlfriend had split up.
Okay.
So I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. I was lost. You know, I didn't have a girlfriend. I wasn't playing football anymore.
How old are you? How old are you now?
Like 20.
Okay. Oh, so this is still really early on.
So I'm 20. I'm trying to figure out my life. I was like, I hate Phoenix. Why am I here? It was 120, my second day here. You know, just all these reasons why I needed, it was everything else in the world except for me. So I was going to leave. So I left Phoenix. I moved up to Idaho.
Okay.
On Valentine's Day, because I had gotten a new girlfriend who ended up being who's my wife now.
Okay.
And I moved 1300, or I moved across the country on Valentine's Day. So solid stuff.
Yeah.
And so then I move up to Idaho, and it kind of just, as much as I wanted to be like, oh, I'm starting fresh, I moved up there. My older brother and his wife lived up there. So I moved up there and I thought, you know, this is where it's at. Refresh, like a start over. I got a job in a restaurant. Well, in Idaho, there's nothing really to do. And when you work in a restaurant, so slowly I fell back, you know, into, you know, slowly I gained, that wasn't slowly, this time I was gaining weight pretty fast. You know, most of it, I was probably back at 300 within like a few months.
It's always amazing how fast it comes back on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, even with me, like it's, you know, I have to watch, you know, I'm genetically disposed to weight gain, even though I'm mm-hmm. really thin, but it's something that if I don't pay attention within a couple of weeks, it's incredible how fast it comes back on.
Absolutely.
But do you think interesting to me, just like you, why did you start? I know this is going back a little bit, but why did you start working at a health club? And also, did that play into the mindset that you started running? Like, because you were at a health club, did you sort of go like, oh, I guess I'll run every day? Was there any relation there, or am I fishing?
No, I don't. The funny thing with the health club is that I had access to every possible, you know, nutritionist, whatever. And I think I probably was maybe the unhealthiest in my life, you know, while working there.
But that's like nutrition, but you were jogging while you were there.
Yeah.
But so did that play into why, or was it two totally unrelated?
I just knew how to lose weight was to not eat as much and just run.
Got it. So you don't necessarily think the health club, like, because, okay, so when you get back to Idaho, now you're putting on weight. Tell me, do you remember how you were thinking then? Did it occur to you, or you were just working in a restaurant, eating that food, going out, like it just didn't even...
At that point, I didn't care. I was having fun, you know. I just turned 21. So you're in Idaho and, you know, there's nothing else to do except to drink and have fun and listen to bluegrass, I guess.
Right. Was your girlfriend slash now wife, she was there?
No, she wasn't. I had left. She was in college and, you know, she's a couple years younger than me. So I had met her in my college days before I had broken up with the other girlfriend. So she was a couple years younger than me.
Got it.
But she, you know, she was on the right path of life at the time. She was going to school and doing whatever. And, you know, at that point I had only known her for a few months when I left. So it wasn't like I didn't really bat an eye. And it wasn't,
you weren't locked.
You would ask me then that I was going to marry this person and have children with her. At that point, it wouldn't have. I would have been like, you're crazy.
Right. So it wasn't, you weren't like locked down. You weren't like anchored with her.
No.
Okay. So you're in Idaho. You're working in a restaurant. You're just kind of living and you're just partying and that whole thing. So now you're 20, you're still early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
So how long does this go on?
So I live there. We ended up moving to Denver for a year, which is just takes like partying. I mean, Denver's like a huge bar city. It's just, that's what I ended up. I was a bouncer because I was a big guy and that's what you do.
Got it.
So just kept that rolling for a year until finally I was like, and that was probably the first point in my life where I was like, because it was the first point I was heavy and not athletic and healthy. You know, I just was just bloated from Philly cheesesteaks and beer, basically.
Were you doing any activity at all?
No.
Like no jogging at all? Like, so, just.
I think I tried to jog once or twice, and I was, well, between the elevation and just being so out of shape, it was pretty quick.
Okay, so
shut that down. I mean, I think literally the only activity was just throwing people out of bars.
Which you literally had to physically do sometimes?
Yeah.
Nice. People throwing.
A little bit of that.
Okay. So then next.
So then I was like, I'm done. I had finally come to the realization that, you know, you can't run from yourself. Basically, you know, no matter where I'm at, I'm still, if I have issues or whatever, I need. So I came back to Phoenix. My mom and my younger brother were still living here. So I was able to just kind of come back and actually connect right back into the health club scene.
Okay, but wait. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I don't want to gloss over the, you came to the realization that you can't escape your own thing. What happened?
I was just so not, I had, because the whole point for me moving up there was to, you know, have this whole epiphany and realization of what I want to do with my life. And because everything in Phoenix was so bad and it was everywhere down here. And this is why, you know, ever since I was 9 years old, I've hated it here. So this must be why I'm, you know, I'm not playing football anymore and I don't have this girlfriend. So, you know, I'm up there in Denver and I'm, you know, I had never been in a fight in my life, and now this is what I was doing for a living, and just overall, like I said, it was the first time I'd ever been like, I am miserably unhealthy at this point. And I think a big turning point was when I had to remove somebody from the bar, and usually, you know, there's still adrenaline or whatever. And there was the time when like, I didn't even care and I was just numb to it. And, you know, I tossed him out and I was like, just another day. And, that was one of those aha moments where I was like, this is not who I want to be. I don't want to be that knucklehead or whoever, just this big fat guy that sits here for the next 15, 20 years of my life.
Were you living by yourself in Denver, or you?
No, I'm still living. My brother and his wife had a place in Denver, and that's where they actually still live. So I still live with them, and you know, it was fun. And
did they have influence? I mean, I'm curious as to why. I mean, obviously, there's just probably real life reasons about why you were miserable. Obviously, I mean, you probably weren't feeling good, and you wanted to do. You didn't know what you were kind of lost, and you know, kind of you had that moment where you were callous to throwing somebody out of a bar, and you were like, "What? Who is this guy that I become?" But not everybody has that "Who is this guy that I become?" moment. And do you remember why that was, or was this always kind of? You sound like you were questioning things even at a young age, like, you know, what do I want to do? You know, even though you think that you misplaced the blame on Phoenix, but you were still unhappy and looking. You were still in that place of looking for something better for yourself. And can you take that back to where you think that might have come from? Is that parental in that way, or anything like that that you can put your finger on?
Yeah, I couldn't. I think I've always been, and it's funny, I can see it now in my 8-year-old, you know, like over analyzing every situation and wanting to know, you know, and there has to be an answer why something in some way. And, you know, once you get, you know, to your late teens and early 20s, and, you know, it's when those are still the questions you're asking, and it's easier to not have accountability.
Right. Do you find at that age when you were at the bouncer and stuff in Denver, do you remember, or would you describe, I kind of know the answer to this, I would think, but anyway, can you describe yourself as an emotional eater or drinker? Were you going to those things for escape?
I mean, I was working in a bar 6 or 7 days a week. So I don't know if it was emotional, if it just, that's what was going on. You know, that was, you know, cause again, I had this ego that was being filled because I'm this bouncer, and you have these, you know, these drunk girls that, you know, think that are telling you things to get in the bar. And, you know, so you think you're much, much better than, you know, your reality is.
Except that except that for you, the truth was underlying that the whole time, it sounds like, because you knew better on some level.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then it finally came to that point.
Okay. So then it comes to that point, you kick back to Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
You start up at the health club again.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say your weight was at that point?
I would probably right around 3 to 320, but a real, real, like no muscle, like
right.
Real, like I said, real bloated, like where people were like, are you okay? You know,
whoa, okay.
From when I left.
Now, okay. So now what's interesting. Yeah. Cause you're less weight, but you're unhealthy. And this is, you know, I talk about this a lot. It's being, you know, if you're thin, that doesn't mean that you're necessarily healthy, and you can be overweight and actually be a lot healthier than somebody who's the exact same weight as you. So did you physically remember the difference in the weight that you were then versus the weight that you were before when it was more athletic?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And what was that like? Like, you talked about the struggles of being that heavy in a world that hadn't quite gotten as heavy as it is now, which is kind of a sad thing to think about. But what were the day-to-day difficulties? Was it hard to walk around the grocery store? I mean, was it that kind of level or what?
Not necessarily like the grocery store, but, you know, stairs. And I mean, I would become, you know, you become a mouth breather, you know, where you can hear yourself breathe. On that level, sleeping again, I was back to being like the afternoon nodder, just, you know, would lose total like consciousness, not like pass out, but, you know, just fall asleep and have, you know, in the middle. The best was, there was one point, and this is what it was real bad, is that we were playing like a Nintendo game, and I don't remember if it was with my wife or my brother, and the next thing they knew, they were looking at me because I was crashing into the wall, and they looked over and I was sound asleep.
No, in the middle of the game?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So you're living with your mom at this point?
Yeah, I'm back here. I think she's here
What's that?
Here in Yuma. So it was my brother mostly.
Cody, just repeat that real quick. I lost you for 1 second.
Yeah, I was back here. My brother was, it was at the house. My mom was between here and Yuma doing some work stuff. So she was here a little bit, but yeah.
Okay. So now how old are you around?
Probably 23, almost 20. Okay,
so
23.
So still so young. Okay. So what happens next?
I start, you know, I'm back at the health club, even though I was always a very solid employee. So I was able to promote at 23 and, my health, my weight had, you know, kind of naturally dropped just because the caloric intake had dropped a bit. But I had gone from basically working with all my friends for them now working for me. Which kind of changed dynamics and stresses of things, but still being 23, 24 years old, you know, we're still out having a good time on the weekend. And, you know, I got a decent raise. So I was like, I got money now. Then I'd reconnected a couple times and like for real reconnected now. I was like, at this point I'm like 24. I wouldn't say I was like, my weight was probably in the like 270s, 300, but nothing that seemed too crazy to me at the time. Like I said, I was healthier.
Right.
You know, I had the sun was back in my life.
Yes.
I wasn't pale. And
were you exercising?
Yeah. You know, not necessarily like a regimen of any kind, but there's definitely more activity.
So why is that?
I think just a different crowd.
Yeah.
I think going from work, there's times, you know, working at a bar where, you know, if you're going into work at 10 or 11 at night, you know, working until 2 when they close down, and then, you know, you're there until 3 or 4 cleaning up, you know, it's just not necessarily the daytime is your friend, you know, most of the time you're sleeping.
Got it.
I started growing up, I was getting more serious. With Sarah, my wife, my girlfriend at the time. And then we find out we're having a baby, which is always one of those big life moments.
Right.
Still working at health club, coming to the realization that I was probably, I think management was coming to the realization that I was probably a little young to be taking over this large of responsibility.
Got it.
With my friends. But I was able to have, you know, save up, and I ended up buying the house that like I was living in.
Okay.
Especially back in what, 2005, when they were just giving money to everybody.
Right.
So that helped out. And so then I was starting to grow up, you know, do my thing. And then, we had our oldest 8 years ago.
Okay.
And then we got married and did all that. And then at that point I was like, I need a change. You know, I'd been at the health club on and off for almost 10 years, and I didn't see, I think both sides had come to a point where we're like, I was like, I'm not necessarily the right guy for this. And I think they were like, yeah, we know you're not the right guy for this.
Okay.
So that's when I was like, I'm going to change everything. I went and I got, and the sheriff's office was hiring. Originally I focused on going to work for Phoenix as a police officer.
Okay.
But at this point I was more athletic, but the athletic overweight guy.
Yeah.
And I had the run part down, but like my push-ups were garbage, and like my sit-ups, so I wasn't able to pass that physical part of it
for the police force.
But the sheriff's office had the detention side, which doesn't have the, because it's not a state overseen position, so there wasn't the physical requirements.
Interesting.
So I was able to get on. You know, I did my 9-week academy. Slowly, but surely I could see, my weight, you know, obviously now I'm married, I have a child, you know, things started getting more comfortable. Being in law enforcement is not necessarily the healthiest environment when it comes to nutrition and physical activity. I mean, once you're past like the first, like once you're out of the academy, you know, you're working bad shift and the only things that are open are fast food and whatever. And I was on the streets, I was in the jail system, and it was the same thing.
Right.
So within a year of doing that, I was back up to the 360, probably 365.
Wow. Okay. So unbelievable. So in like a 10-year period, you went down 100 and up 100.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. And you're how old at this point?
27.
Wow. Okay.
20, yeah.
Okay. So
27.
So you're in law enforcement and you're 360.
Mm-hmm. And that's not athletic. It comes back to the ego. It's almost like, and especially in the jail environment, where you kind of have to have that
authority.
Yeah. And again, I wasn't a super, like, I wasn't a sloppy, you know what I mean? Like, my uniform was always kept. So, you know, there's those, some people that are overweight, and you knew that, you know, an inmate knew that they'd probably have a good chance against them. So I wasn't on that level, but at the same time, I was still bigger and a big guy and just the ego part of it.
Right. Was there any, I don't want to like beg any questions or whatever, but would you say you were generally happy in your life at that point?
I think I was pretty stressed about life, going from no family to a full family, and then this new job, you know, where it's nothing like I've ever been in before, where I'm dealing with 60 to 120 in my brain at the time, the worst people, you know, on the planet.
Right.
So it's hard to, I think it's hard to really, for me to look back to really tell where I was, you know, emotionally with my head or anything, just because I had so many huge life events like right there going on.
Right. And then just your social life, same kind of group of friends kind of thing.
I moved on. I had, you know, now I was my new friends, my new detention officer friends, the people that worked at the sheriff's office, you know, and again, I had a new baby, I had a new wife, you know, that was a new job. Those were kind of the biggest issues that I was facing me.
So tell the story. So this is close to you're at the amusement park?
Yeah, so the actual amusement park had already had happened.
Okay, so tell that story just so the people can.
Okay, so we had decided after our honeymoon, since we're in Phoenix and LA is just, you know, 6-7 hours, we decided to go to Disneyland and Six Flags because it was open that Monday. So we went to Six Flags. And at this point, still, it was funny that whole day at Six Flags. In like retrospect, like really, I think it was a big play on my mind with my weight, because, you know, having to be like physically squeezed into a roller coaster because of your size, you know, and then going, oh, I hope I'm about to go upside down at 80 miles an hour, I really hope that this like slightest of click that I just heard is going to be what's going to hold me in here. So besides that happens. It's at the end of the day, we're heading out, and this group of like four or five Japanese girls came up to me and asked for my picture. And I was like, yeah, sure. You know, again, still big guy mentality, ego, you know, thinking it must be, you know, they must think I'm somebody famous or some football player or something. Because, you know, I had been working at the club. I was big, 3 something, but I wasn't obese, like, you know, falling out of my chair.
Right.
So take my picture, like have my wife take the picture. So they didn't want, so that was even more like the ego boost. I'm talking like 14 to like 17 year old girls, you know, so like five of them, you know, just, right. you know, just took me to the next level on of confidence.
Okay.
So whatever that happens, they go on their way. We go on our way. We go to Disneyland, and that's when I realized that Disneyland is much more accepting to the larger patron.
Okay.
And so whatever. So then life goes on. I get my job at the sheriff's office at this point.
Okay.
And, you know, one night or afternoon, I'm sitting there with, you know, just with my wife and child or whatever, just hanging out watching MTV. And one of those real life or shows come on, where they follow like teenagers going through like different situations. Like my parents are gamblers, or I'm a kleptoman, whatever.
Yeah.
And this one was, I'm an overweight college kid.
Okay.
And so then you're going through it, and this girl who's overweight is talking about, she's like, you know, I didn't really think about, you know, my weight or anything until I was in Japan. And these kids that I was staying with, showed me all these pictures of, like, their trading card pictures of all these people when they go to the United States that they take pictures of and with. Like, they try to find, like, the fattest biggest people they can find in the United States to come back. And then they print off pictures and they literally trade them, I guess, like trading cards. So,
I mean, it's so horrible. It's almost, I mean, it's like so absurd and horrible at the same time.
Yeah. So, you know, I have one of those, like, curl up in like an overdramatic kind of ball.
Now you're watching this with your wife. Did your wife have the same
memory? She looks at me and she's dying. Cause again, she was there.
So I was like, did it click with her as fast as it clicked with you?
Yeah.
And it had been how long since you had been there at Disneyland?
Probably right around a year, maybe.
So and immediately the two of you watch this, and it's just like, it's like a light bulb immediately.
Like I think like just the life like dropped from, like, seriously, like I see it in my brain, like looking back, like I was just in a ball on the couch, you know, rocking back and forth, going, no, this can't be.
Oh my God! Now, did your wife laugh?
She was dying,
laughing,
like, rolling. Yeah, tears. Because yeah, like I said, she was there. She's the one that had to deal with it for the next like 2 days of like, hey, remember when?
Yeah.
When I was this big shot,
yeah.
With these teenage girls.
Can you imagine what would it had been like if you just hadn't seen that TV show?
Yeah, who knows?
I mean, it's just like that to me. I don't know. I mean, that's amazing. So you watched the show. Luckily, you watched that show.
So I watched the show, and like it was literally within like a week, like things were, I was like, things are changing. I had a copy of like the original P90, like on the shelf. I had that bad boy popped out. I was like, I'm going to do this like 3 times a day.
You're over it at this point.
Yeah, there's no more of this.
Right.
So I was like, back to it. You know, like how I lost it before. I was like, I know if I just run a lot and I don't eat as much, it's gonna work.
Right.
So that's what I started doing, and I was doing like P90 at night or early morning, and then I'd go to like the sheriff's office like track, and then I'd just run and run and run.
Now, did you, obviously the nutritional thing didn't come into play, but did you should have? I would imagine that you started feeling better in your mind, like you're starting to own things. Was that a feeling you remember having?
Not yet, because it was so like I got to do. It doesn't matter what I have to do. You know, I'm going to lose.
Because of the Japanese experience.
Yeah, just yeah.
You're just like, I can't. That's so shit. You were so shamed by that. You were just like, I don't care. This isn't like even me taking care of myself. I can't deal with this.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
And I think at this point, because yeah, We just had our second son. So I was, you know, I didn't necessarily even care. I was just squeezing in whenever I could.
Yeah.
Just high levels of cardio and minimal calories. Like,
got it,
ridiculous.
Just straight up.
Like, yeah.
Got it. Okay. So I just keep thinking about you, just luckily, if you guys just gotten up to go make a sandwich, you could have missed this entire chapter of your life. But anyhow, So when does the nutritional shift happen?
So I lose a bunch of weight, like a lot, like real bad, like in a real, like, I dropped 100 pounds in like less than a year. Like,
yeah.
Biggest Loser style. Like,
yeah.
Just the worst possible way. So again,
well, let me just say that a you know, 52 weeks to lose 100 pounds isn't insane. I mean, it's on the upper edge of kind of healthy weight loss, but it's not big. I don't know if you've heard my last podcast or two ago. I don't know. I was talking about that whole Biggest Loser thing because mm-hmm. they'll starve before the weigh-in, you know, they'll starve themselves. They'll sit in a sauna for, you know, 10 hours, you know, they'll do all this like crazy, crazy, totally unhealthy stuff. And it sounds go ahead.
Yeah. And that's funny. And with that, you know, and I actually like some people on like other social media or Instagram were going off about how this girl, you know, she lost all that weight, but you know, they're the ones that are promoting this show and are so, you know, about this. And she's the one that actually stuck to the game plan and everybody's appalled, you know?
Right. Yeah. That's how that goes. But anyhow, so you're losing weight. Yeah. So go ahead, back to the shift.
So that, and people obviously noticed, I got the attention of a lieutenant who was like, hey, there's an opportunity in a different division. And so he was able to connect that, and I was able to take care of that. I was able to transfer out of like the jail system into the training division. Or actually, no, I transferred from the jail system into transportation.
Because you had started to get thinner?
Well, yeah. Because I had already had contact with this guy, and had worked for him, and then I had done good work for him, you know, like documents and that kind of stuff, and it was a good officer. But now, you know, losing this weight, you know, I don't know what he saw or what it triggered, but I was able to change divisions into a transportation division. And I was super lucky to move from that, from where I was to that, because I was with people that were, one, happy that where they were, and two, the guys that I happened to work with were like super like into fitness, and one guy's like a bodybuilder guy. So I was able to plug into that, which helped kind of slowly bring the nutrition stuff into reality.
Right.
And then I was able to, again, this lieutenant moved, and he is able to pull me over to the training division, which is like the crown jewel of positions. Cause one, you get to work out and you have your own office, you know what I mean? You're not around, inmates. So right. I was able to do that. And that's when things really, like, nutrition wise, not necessarily nutrition where I'm now, but just the opening.
Right.
To a healthier nutrition.
Okay. But then there was I read in your bio that you watched, I mean, what is the, so now the progression, what's the next level? What led you to, well, what were you doing then? What were you eating then?
So, I went to training, and they have like a lot of law enforcement. They're big into CrossFit. And what goes with CrossFit, paleo. So I got into that. So that was like that was what I was predominantly doing, you know.
Which, I mean, in the scheme of things is a really good step.
Absolutely.
Right. So but you're like, so, Well, I mean, you get, so does that mean you, I mean, did you give up dairy at that point?
Well, that was easy because I didn't really, because I had a lot of allergies and all that growing up. So I wasn't, I think when I was in college, just pounding like protein shakes, like, you know, three scoops away on top of like low fat milk or whatever.
Right.
I think it finally just like blew out my system to okay. where I was after that. I couldn't really drink milk at all without just like an occasional bowl of cereal. But
and what about like cheese?
Cheese was, it was hit and miss. Yogurts was hit and miss, but nothing too crazy.
Yeah. And so, okay, so you go, you CrossFit and you're paleo at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what yeah. is, so talk about that a little bit.
So I was, it's funny, and that's why I think I can make fun of like the hardcore paleo guys, because like if you follow it to a T, you know, like I read like the Lauren Cordain book, you know, the paleo athlete and all this. I think it's a pretty solid lifestyle, but once it became a gimmick, you know what I mean? Everybody had some, this was the same time that like Tim Ferriss's like 4-hour body was coming out.
Right.
So you could kind of hack your paleo, you know?
Yes.
You could. And so then that, you know, and then you'd go to like, you'd have your, you know, you could eat whatever you wanted basically. And it wasn't about calories, but you could, you know, and basically it was Atkins with, you know, a couple heads of broccoli or,
right.
you know,
it was just sort of another excuse to eat as much meat as you want. And
yeah. And then that was a funny thing. It wasn't even meat. It's so funny that, so you have like your paleo, like barbecues or your paleo, what's the word, where you have like everybody brings a dish.
Right.
And, you know, you have paleo muffins and paleo, you know, and I'm just like, there's nothing.
It's absurd.
Now in hindsight, I mean, in the moment I was drinking the Kool-Aid. I was Mr. CrossFit, Mr. Paleo. I could eat, you know, I could take, you know, my cod liver oil pills. I could take, you know, all this, just as much fat and cholesterol and
yeah,
that I wanted, and I was going to be good. And I was strong, and don't get me wrong, it was probably the strongest I'd ever been
right.
in my life.
Right.
You know, I was probably still sitting in like the 260 to like 250 range, but pretty, pretty solid just from working out
right.
and all the time. And,
but a big dude nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah. and that's the with the pay, I mean, it's so, if you put cinnamon on something, you know, because it drops your, so, you know, they fade back between paleo and like a zone, you know, low glycemic kind of stuff. So you could have whatever, you know, 10 scoops of peanut butter, but you put some cinnamon on it, it's going to keep your blood sugar low. I mean,
right.
it just,
right.
it was silly. And I think it's gotten a little better
yeah.
compared to when it was, when yeah. like, you know, you'd
well,
have.
Well, just the idea of like the Paleolithic era muffins. You know, like, I
mean, yeah, or the Paleolithic cigarettes, or
yeah.
you know, everybody has, it's like, don't, yeah, and everybody acts like they're like 99 to 100%, like all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When they spout it to you, and I'm like, no, you're not.
Yeah, right. And so what was the turning point post that era?
So I'd worked in training for a few years. My wife was moving up on what she was doing, like work wise. And at this point we had our third son.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we were looking at, and working in a public, you know, funded career. I hadn't gotten any kind of, and it's not about necessarily about money, unless, you know, when until you have to pay the bills. And we were spending like $300 more a month to take care of, to have somebody else take care of our sons.
Got it.
Than I was even making, you know, working
right
in the sheriff's office. So we decided as a family, it's, you know, I'll come home, you know, and hang out with the kids all day. And that ended up, my oldest one is already in school at the time. So, you know, I started watching a lot of Netflix during nap time, and that's really where it started, because I felt like paleo was decent and there were some things that made sense, but again, it was super easy for me to just fall off of it and rationalize it
right
with myself, like, well, you know, or whatever. And so I wasn't working out as heavily because I wasn't in that environment anymore.
Right. At the sheriff.
And like you were saying, it doesn't take much for me to, I mean, crazy like weight gain.
Well, the way that I've come to look at it is like the normal state of the human species in given our design is one of general activity. You know, that's like the normal state. So
yeah.
Because in the modern world, it's normal for us not to be, not to be that active. I mean, we don't have to be active in the modern world. I talk about this all the time. That's created our normal sort of state of being. Like we don't have to be that active. We don't have to forage for food. We don't have to, you know, run around and hunt animals. We're pretty stagnant. That's normal in the modern world, but clearly as a species, it's not normal for us. But I think that sets the bar at like, that's why it's so easy to gain weight, because it's such a abnormal in the context of our species, it's such an abnormal place to live where you're not moving a lot. And so that's why it just comes on so fast. I mean, it's just not normal for our bodies to not be active. And for that matter, more importantly, even to not be eating healthy food all the time. I mean, it's just our normal state is to eat wild food, you know? And so it is why part of the reason I see it is just like you get step out of that realm, of taking care of yourself, even for a short time, your body's like, this is totally unnatural, and it will just go into that mode really fast.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I came home still pretty heavily paleo, to the point where we bought 6 chickens, like chicks. I was like, we're gonna have our own eggs, you know, it's gonna be perfect.
Right.
Like somehow I'm thinking that 6 chickens are going to be able to supply my family of 5 with a steady supply. It'll totally be worth it.
Right,
totally.
Right.
So, you know, I have my baby chicks. This is good. And then, like I said, I was watching like Netflix and gaining weight and, you know, not necessarily feeling bad, but just like trying to figure out, just to prolong and be able to be healthier. So I watched, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, if you look anywhere, a lot of people like myself, I was watching, I came across Forks Over Knives, and that was kind of like one of those, you know, like, oh, this kind of makes sense, you know? Right. And then me looking at my like family history of like heart disease, okay, and going, hey, maybe, you know, slamming all this butter and eggs and whatever covered in cinnamon is
right,
not necessarily the best thing for me.
Right.
So it was kind of, we had Thanksgiving. It was Thanksgiving. It'll be a year and a half ago. So 2 Thanksgivings ago.
Uh-huh.
And that was like our last like big, like carnivorous big meal. And then like that weekend after, we kind of just slowly as a family, like I talked to my wife and she kind of just rolls with it.
Right.
Cause what's it going to be this week? And we started and I was already, obviously I was doing most of the cooking. So she's kind of just like, do whatever.
Right.
I'll eat it.
Right.
Or I won't. There's no, but at the same time, she, you know, she had gone through her own weight with, you know, having 3 kids and, you know, within 5 years of each other, you know. And so she, I think, was at the point where she's like, I think we're good with this kid thing right now. You know, I'd like to.
Time to get back into things.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it was almost a little bit hard for her because she was always super, super thin. Like 6, like I found a picture of her from when she was in high school with like a 6-pack, and I was like, what happened to this girl?
Right.
And so, I think that's the evening for the Japanese photo taking. But so she was on board, and again, now I have chickens popping out eggs at this point. But we changed, and you know, the boys were on board for the most part. You know, obviously we didn't go. I didn't go from my heavy meat to like kale smoothies and whatever. But we got a juicer, and we did that. And you know, there's a lot of you know the fake meat products. You know, like the tofurkey and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Beyond meat, and we bought into it, and it's not. And now we're just at over a year and a half. And without even, because I hadn't even really started training or doing anything crazy. And I think just with that diet change, I lost almost like 70 pounds, like in that year.
Wow.
Like without, you know, I wasn't doing crazy.
Not starving yourself. Just.
No.
Just changing what was in front of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you dropped another 70.
Yeah.
God.
To where I'm at now.
And where are you at now?
I'm about, I don't weigh myself, but like probably like 190,
wow.
180, depending on how heavy, like if I'm training.
Yeah. So you're in the healthy range. I mean, it's unbelievable. And you spend how long since you've been in that range?
Oh, I don't even know if I know that in fourth grade, I think I weighed like 124 pounds.
Yeah, but I mean, how long have you been at,
oh,
at this point?
Oh, maintained? I've maintained for since I've lost it, basically. Since we switched over and it just slowly came off. I mean, obviously there's been a couple like 10, maybe 15 pound spikes just based on going from training and like after I ran. Like my first 50, I wasn't obviously running for that week after, and
I probably took
some liberties, you know, and when I cheat or which I don't call it that, you know, I ate things that I definitely wouldn't eat on a normal basis.
Right. So it's like it's like most of your time. I always talk about most of the time. So
yeah.
Your most of the time is at a really good place, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what is your, you're running, how often are you, what kind of mileage are you putting in per week?
Right now, I actually had to, for the last 4 weeks, because I had it's the first time I've hurt, I had like a calf strain.
Okay.
So right now I'm just doing a lot of bike, like in the gym, stuff.
Got it.
But yeah, I had a 50K I was supposed to do this past weekend that I had to end up dropping out of, which was a bummer.
But you've done, what kind of races have you done?
I've done marathons. My longest was a 50 miler in December.
Okay.
And yeah. And last summer was I ran a half marathon. And I was a top age grouper and fourth overall. So I'm hoping in June going back up to Wyoming and being the number one overall guy.
What was your time? What was your time in that half?
It was a 142.
Wow. Great. Well,
which was probably the worst thing that could have happened, like kicking my running to the next level was once like I had success. I was like, well,
you got a little taste.
See what else we can do.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of, I mean, I'm not nearly as fast as you are, but I've certainly, you know, after finishing my first marathon last December and just being like, oh, what? Hmm. You know, and
exactly.
there always is that kind of next. And I think that goes with food too. Like I've always talked about when you start to see improvement and you start to make changes and you see what's happening, it's definitely its own motivator. I commend you. I think the reason why you're where you are and seem to be staying there is because you didn't, I mean, if you think about our conversation just now, it spanned a lot of years. You know,
yeah.
and it went up and down, but the fact of the matter is at the end of the day, you had a progression and it went from what you were eating, which is anything, to paleo, which was at least a consideration of what you were putting in your body. Whether you think it's misplaced or not is sort of neither here nor there. You started to think about that side of the equation in addition to the movement. And even in the movement realm, you took you know, I'm always going to come to the small. The reason why it's sticking is because you took time to get there. And it's a, I think that you can, I hope that you would look back and in a way, in a weird way, it's be thankful that you took whatever path you took because it's gotten to where you are now.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, the bottom line is that you have to have, there's nothing that necessarily that I can tell somebody through my experience or that you can say, you know, once you have to make that decision, you know, and I think with mine is, you're right, with the little, it's a lot easier to digest and say, I'm going to go to the next week and I'm going to go to the next week after that, you know, after you make that first step, instead of going, I'm going to go all out and starve myself for 4 days and see, you know, 10 pounds off the scale, but I'm so burnt out that it's not worth it.
Right. And then in terms of your life now, like with your kids and stuff, I mean, I don't know, is that an impetus for you having kids to stay healthy in the way that you are?
Absolutely. Because I think one, kids aren't dumb. I mean, you know what I mean? I think I'm trying to avoid the preacher's daughter kind of thing because yes. Kids are going to know, you know what I mean? I never wore my seatbelt really that often until I had kids because you can't be that parent and expect your children to follow what you say.
Yeah. They'll follow what you do. In other words,
exactly. Right. When they become of age and then, you know, honestly, they still have free will. You know, they go to a birthday party. I'm not sending a note with them pinned to their shirt.
Right.
You know, and my oldest is 8 and he's only been doing this for a year and a half. And, you know, but they know that I'm out, that I'm training, or that their mom is out getting up and going running. Yeah. And, you know, we're eating as a family, we're eating these foods. And why we do this, you know, there's not just, this is what you're going to eat because I say, as I go and have my Big Macs in the car and they go, you know, they see it.
Right. So, yeah, I was just looking at, I've referenced this quote before, but I actually looked it up. So didn't have to paraphrase it anymore, but Albert Schweitzer said, influence isn't the main thing in example isn't the main thing in influencing others. It's the only thing, you know, in other words, setting the example is the single best and only way to truly influence somebody else. Cause you can tell people all sorts of stuff, but if you're not living it, it's sort of, they instinctually know it's not authentic.
Absolutely. And I think there's nothing more humbling or that's going to keep you in check than having your 8-year-old, say, I don't think that's on course, but with what we do.
Yeah. Right. Great.
You know,
excellent. So, do you still see people, have you crossed paths with people that knew you back then and see you now? Do they recognize you or are they just like, holy, oh my God.
Yeah. It's, I mean, the change from 360 to like 260, that area wasn't as like a big of a change. But this, to where I'm at now, there's people that I'm, you know, friends with on Facebook or other social media that have sent me notes,
yeah,
like messages going, do I know you?
Right.
I'm like, yeah, I live 3 houses down from you.
Oh my God. That's so
yeah,
funny.
You know me.
Now, did you, what was the impetus for the blog?
It's kind of, my second son had started going to school. So I had 2 boys at school and it was just me and my youngest. And it was kind of, an accountability kind of thing. Really just putting it out there and just see what happened, you know. It's funny how I found that, because I haven't ran solid for like four weeks, how much it's changed, like the effect, like on my ability to sit down and like try to write something.
Uh-huh.
You know, just the cause and effect of not running and not being able to fully type something out.
Right. Right. Well, you'll get back into that, but you are still active and you're still rolling with it and everything else.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I mean, the last big thing was I took my 3 boys on a spring break hikeapalooza where every day we went on a different hike in the Phoenix area. So the tales of that are pretty classic, especially when we got lost.
Yeah.
So
I read that was a good one. Well, I really appreciate your time, and I think your story is inspiring, obviously for obvious reasons, but I think that at the same time, it's relatable. And I think that some of these, sometimes, you know, people in the world that get interviewed, like for The Biggest Loser and stuff, they're just in a world that's so unfamiliar to most people that are living in the world. And I think that the power of your story is that there's nothing totally unusual about your upbringing or anything else other than you were able to somehow manage this in the context of a pretty typical world and upbringing and all sorts of things. And it certainly took a lot of courage for you to do it. And I really commend you on that, like I said, and I'm just, it's pretty cool that you do that. I hope that your story gets out to more people, because I think for some people, the thought of doing what you did seems impossible, that it just seems like too much of a gargantuan task to even take on. So I guess my final question to you would be, you know, what would you say to people who are kind of sitting there, and whether it's an overweight issue for them, or if it's some other kind of health issue, or if it's just generally that they want to be healthier and happier, what would you say to them?
You have to really figure out what your why, you know, the big why is. Why do you do anything? It doesn't have to be, you know, an international photo conspiracy. You just have to figure out what's going to be that step, you know, that little step that's going to be easy enough to take that second step. But I go back to, you have to, you know, if you don't have children, you know, for yourself or for the people around you, and like you said, you know, you have to be selfish, you know, because there's nobody's going to run on that treadmill for you. Nobody's going to do it for you, you know? And so once I think you figure out that you're ready, you know, you look towards other people that are necessarily have achieved, you know, the things that you're trying to do, and get a hold of them and see what's working for them.
Okay. I love it. All right, man. Well, I really appreciate your time, and your dog sounds cute. I hope that's your dog. If not, you have a very annoying neighbor. And anyway, I appreciate your time, and let people know where they can find you.
You can find me at fattoplant.com, which is the word fat, the number 2, and then the word plant, .com. And then that's going to be my same handle on Instagram and Twitter. That's basically the two big ones. Facebook's basically just my pipeline from Instagram and Twitter. So if you want to, you can send me an email. Anybody has any questions for me, at fattoplant@gmail.com. The same, FAT, the number 2, PLANT, @gmail.com.
So. And when you heal up, do you have a race in the forefront, or you haven't actually entered anything because you want to heal up first?
I have the next thing I'll have is, it'll be hopefully that race in June up in Wyoming, the half marathon.
Okay. Got it. That you're going to win. So, okay. Yeah, well, I hope our paths cross, and I'd love to go for a run with you sometime. So maybe we'll hook that up this year.
Yeah.
All right, man. Have a good one. Thanks a lot.
Can't see beyond the things around. consequence.